You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to the Gastroenteritis Blues. My name is Steve Lippman. I am joined, as always, by Emily Cannell and Dan Volpone, and a special guest today, Chris Klein. He's an expert at the Sixer Sense and a host of the Sixer Sense podcast. He knows all about the Hawks and Sixers, which is perfect for our purposes. Chris, how are you? Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
I figure, you know, we're going to review the most recent game between the Sixers and the Hawks, but obviously we haven't talked to you on the podcast yet. I wanted to get a few of your overarching thoughts as to how the series has gone so far. Sixers are up 2-1. Like, has this gone about the way you would expect from knowing the two teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think Atlanta has proven itself to be a pretty good team this postseason. I had them beating the Knicks, but I don't think anyone thought they would beat them quite as handedly as they did. We've seen road teams come out and, you know, punch better teams in the mouth in game one before. We saw it with Memphis and Utah in the first round, so I don't think game one was too much of a shocker. And, you know, to see the Sixers bounce back like they have been is, I think, pretty expected as well. I think everyone knew they were still the better team after game one. So I think it's pretty close to what I would have expected so far.
Yeah. FanDuel didn't know that for some reason, because we talked about after game one, they had the Hawks as the favorites in the series. So I put $5, which for me is a lot of money, on the Sixers, because I thought that was horrible. So I'm feeling good about that. But I agree that most people that you would hear from thought the Sixers would still win the series.
Yeah.
I have to ask, like, people seem to give a lot of credence to what the betting lines are doing. And I want to know, why is that? Is that just because people think people in Vegas actually know things, or are they just capitalizing on people? Like, Dan, how does it work? And like, when like a line looks wonky, people, it seems like people will think like, that's an interesting line. And like, think that maybe Vegas knows more than we do. What's going on?
I mean, I like gambling. I think that it's always a combination of, so this is why I know what's going on, basically, is why I said that. And that's why I care what the lines are. I think that for, you know, how the lines are made, it's kind of a combination of you know, what they think will happen and also what people are betting. So, you know, there was one game I remember. This is just a random example, but earlier this year, the Lakers had LeBron James and Anthony Davis both out, and I think it was pretty quick after LeBron's long-term injury. And the Cavs were underdogs in the game, and by the end of the day, they were favorites. Like, by the time the game started, and the Lakers actually ended up winning. But the line moved throughout the day because everyone was betting on the Cavs. And basically, right, the sites and the casinos want to make money. And so if too many people are betting one team, they could lose money. And they want to be guaranteed to make money. So they're going to lower the line to try to get more people to bet the other team.
Sure.
And that's basically what's going on. So it's kind of partly where they start out as is, you know, definitely takes into account some information, and they have some, you know, basketball knowers, you know, picking these lines. But as they adjust, that's kind of just the consensus of what everyone is betting on the initial line throughout the day.
Yeah. game three, the Sixers and Atlanta, the series moved to Atlanta. The Sixers ended up winning 127-111. We're going to break down the game overall, but Emily, what were your sort of overall thoughts about game three? Personally, I was watching it. I never thought that this game was like in question. Like I from very early, I felt like, oh, the Sixers are going to win this game. I just thought that they, you know, were really well positioned, even when the score was a bit closer. What did you think, Emily?
Yeah, I was never unsure that the Sixers would win, even if the Hawks went on mini runs. It just felt like we had it in hand. I feel like the Hawks kind of knew that we had it in hand. Like Nate McMillan was like, keep your heads up, boys, like in the huddle. Like he was like, he's like, you guys are downtrodden. Like, and when you can do that to a team, I feel like that's a win for the Sixers. It was a super physical game, I thought, like even outside of you know, the Joel stuff, just like a lot of like people hitting the ground and a lot of physical play. So normally I think it's stupid when they do the two games in between the playoffs when they don't travel. I'm like, just do one then and then give them two for travel. But I'm kind of glad they had the two after game three, because I thought it was really physical and the guys could use some time.
Yeah, it's a little strange. There are two games in between the two games in Atlanta, but only or 2 days in between the two games in Atlanta, but only one in between games four and five. What about you, Chris? From game three, did anything particular stand out to you as to like why the game ended up where it did?
Yeah, I mean, like Emily said, I think it was pretty much in hand from the beginning. I think Philly really turned it on defensively in a way we hadn't seen yet. This was a really strong showing from Joel on both sides of the ball. I mean, you know, he's been doing crazy things on offense all postseason and on defense too. But I think game three was an especially big night from him on both sides of the ball. You know, Ben and Thybulle, though granted and Matisse got into some foul trouble, both did their things. There were some really impressive flashes just from the defense throughout the game. I think Atlanta is really struggling to figure out Philadelphia's defense now that Doc has made the pretty obvious adjustments that were necessary after game one. You know, Ben on Trae Young has obviously made all the difference in the world. And just offensively, Atlanta really doesn't have an answer for this team. I think some people going in thought maybe Clint Capella was one of the few guys who could give Joel some trouble. That hasn't really been the case. This wasn't Joel's best game as a scorer, but he still had 27 on 14 shots, 8 assists, had some really great like cross-court passes and reads out of doubles. You know, he's just doing everything at this point. He's been super impressive, maybe like the best player in the playoffs so far or up there. So it definitely seems like this series is moving pretty strongly in Philadelphia's favor.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Joel. I thought he was just amazing and didn't force anything. I thought this whole playoff run so far, he really hasn't forced it. And when they're double and triple teaming him, he's either finding a way to get fouled or he's finding an open teammate. But his defense was great. He was falling so much. And he was holding his knee. And this is just sort of what we're going to have to live with in this playoff run. Dan, what did you think about Joel against Atlanta on Friday night? What do you think about the holding the knee and the falling and the sort of the emotional experience of watching him?
Yeah, I mean, for the last part of it, I feel like it's basically something we're going to have to get used to. And I think we have gotten used to it a bit in the past. Like, I feel like in seasons past, there have always been games where it's like, because I remember at first, and I know we're almost adjusted to it now because he's talked a lot about how he kind of falls on purpose to take weight off of his knees and his legs. But when he first started, and it was, if you remember even back to like his first two seasons coming off of, you know, the foot injury, every time he fell, everyone was like gasping and crying. And it's just kind of something we've gotten used to. Joel's going to fall and they want him to fall. So I try to just always assume the best unless he's like on the ground rolling around basically. But yeah, he's been great. I mean, he looks like a different player, and we talked about it a lot before, just throughout the season, but I think a lot of people will kind of look to the obvious difference of, you know, the Sixers have put more shooting around him. And I think that helps. But Joel was also just clearly a better player than he has been like ever. You know, the shooting helps, but last year was an especially weird year where we didn't have shooting. And even before that, you know, we might not have had quite the shooting we have, but Joel was never close to this. You know, Joel was great. Joel was, you know, a top at his best, like a top eight player. And he's really making the case to be a top one player right now.
Yeah.
He's been unbelievable. He's done literally everything well. And yeah, it's awesome. I mean, what else can you say about the guy other than he's done everything you could want him to do? It's a lot of fun to watch. And it's, you know, on top of like the Sixers have always been my team and I root for the Sixers because I was raised to root for the Sixers and I love the Sixers. It's like an added bonus to have like a guy who, even if he weren't on my team, maybe he would drive me crazy because he, you know, of the celebrations and all of that. And he'd be a guy you kind of like love to hate on another team, but I just love his game. And it's so much fun to watch him just take the next step and sustain the next step through the playoffs, which I think is not a given ever and a big deal. And he's just been basically perfect. I mean, he's been incredible in these playoffs.
Moving to Ben, Simmons had a sort of tale of two halves sort of game. His defense, I thought, was very good throughout. I just think that he plays very much within himself, and he's been great on that end all year. In the first half, he was, for me, noticeably passive. And the big example that people are coming to is when he was underneath the rim in the air with like 2 seconds left on the clock and he passed it out. Doc Rivers had a quote about, he said that they told Simmons at halftime that he was being way too passive. Quote, "We told him that we were going to come out and feature him in the post and to be aggressive." That's from Kyle Newbeck. They did a great job of that, and Ben played great, especially in the third quarter to lengthen the lead. Chris, when you see this stuff with Ben, does it feel to you like an ability thing? Like he's not so skilled from a scoring standpoint, or do you see it as an aggression and sort of decision-making thing? Or is it some of both when you look at a game like he had on Friday?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to aggression. Obviously he's not the most like naturally talented scorer. He doesn't have the best touch necessarily, but he's been pretty consistently able to get to the rim and to score when he has wanted to during his career. I think this season has been especially tough for him, just like, you know, trying to be aggressive as consistently as possible. You mentioned that play where he's under the basket in the first half. Yeah, I mean, when he's aggressive, that really helps the Sixers. It really helps him. I think everyone has kind of accepted that as the best version of Ben at this point. I think he's been really good this postseason in general. I think he's gotten a lot of unfair criticism, frankly. But, you know, the third quarter especially was probably the best we've seen him in a while. And I think that's the Ben Simmons the Sixers should hopefully get more of as the postseason goes on.
Yeah, Emily, do you agree with that kind of stuff? And what did you think of the game from Ben?
Yeah, I agree with the stuff that everyone's saying. It is just I just agree with the stuff, you know, it's fine.
I agree with the stuff.
It is goes back to like the very frustrating thing about Ben and his consistency. It's like if all it takes is for Doc to tell Ben at half, like, hey, you need to be more aggressive, like, why can't he just do it all the time? Like, why is his like default this like passive play? That is the only frustrating thing, because we've seen time and time again that when he plays aggressively and, you know, just like drives instead of looks to pass out, like good things tend to happen. So I feel like I've said this a million times, like, hopefully this shows him like, this is how we want you to play. Like, can we do it, please? And we'll see what happens. But I love when Ben plays like this. It's that, like that. It's so fun to watch him play like that. It can really like change the momentum of a game. I mean, it did in the third quarter. It was a close game at the half, and then Ben came out like a man on a mission and we were up by like 15 or so, you know, like it can change momentum. And I think we just need more of that, especially as we get further and further into these playoffs.
I agree. I think that, you know, the Sixers have enough players and they have a superstar and they have enough shooters and all that kind of stuff to a lot of times survive a sort of meh offensive output from Ben. But you're right, as we go further and further, they're going to need as much from everywhere. And if you look at Atlanta, like, they don't have anybody to physically match him. So, you know, I think that he's just sort of this, he is who he is, and it's going to come and go. But you saw the other night how important it is, especially when they were guarding Joel like they were, which was double teams pretty much right away. Dan, what did you think about that? Ben's performance and like the way that Joel handled a sort of different look from Atlanta with even more double teams and multiple coverages.
Yeah, I mean, so starting with the Ben stuff, I mean, I've said before, I'm mostly abstaining from Ben talk, mostly because I'm just, I think it's kind of just the whole discourse is frustrating and is boiled down to, you know, people debating, like, you know, even his supporters are like basically making the case he's a plus player, which to me is ridiculous because he obviously is. And like to give into like the trolls are going to say he's not. And it's like, well, who really cares what they say? But, you know, I have tried not to talk too much about it and I fail constantly, but I try not to. I thought Ben had a good game, to be honest, and not just like he was a plus player. Like, I thought Ben was good. And I think that, you know, Ben was good for Ben. And the I think, you know, the point that you guys didn't say directly, but that I, you know, kind of took away from your comments and agree with is that Ben doesn't need to, it's not like, you know, oh, Ben isn't scoring because he's focusing on defense, right? Like, Ben can do more than one thing at a time. Ben can play offense and defense, and we know the defense is going to be there. And when Ben is going to be more aggressive, he's going to be better offensively. And those are the games we point to when we look at Ben's best games. And he only had 18 points. He only had 7 assists, right? Those aren't like eye-popping numbers, but I thought he was really solid, right? Like, I think, you know, especially in that third quarter, like you guys said, Ben was really good. And that's the kind of game you're looking for. 18 and 7 from Ben and good defense. He can do that. What was the Embiid part of the question? I already forget.
Oh, who gives a shit? Something about him handling double teams and.
Oh, yes. No, I mean, I don't know if it's more, if he's just, you know, confident in his teammates or what, but he's been very willing to pass out. He's making good reads. And, you know, I think that there was a lot of talk earlier about, like, earlier, like maybe beginning of this season, even end of last season, that, you know, Joel is better than he had been passing out of double teams and making the right read. It was probably true that he was better. I still didn't think he was very good at it. And he still has room to grow as a passer, just in terms of like placing passes in the right spot. But there's, I mean, to be fair, there's a lot of superstars who aren't great passers. And Joel certainly qualifies as a superstar who's not a great passer. But I mean, he's done nothing but get better out of these reads when they're sending doubles and triples. And he's talked about it. I mean, he talked about it a lot with the Ramona interview, where he talked about, you know, he's always kind of game plan for a one-on-one matchup against the best centers. And he's looking at it now more like every team we play are going to send 2 or 3 guys. What do I do from there? And it's clear, you know, he's improving there. And I think that's the biggest difference with the team, right? Because my concern coming into the playoffs, and I don't mean concern in terms of like unable to overcome it, just like, what will we see it done, was like double teams are going to be more frequent. And in the Hawks series, they really haven't, except for in game 3. Joel's usage rating, I think, was like over 49% in game 2. But, you know, certainly game 3, we saw the doubles and Joel responded with 8 assists. So I think that, you know, making those reads is absolutely something he's getting better at. And it's to the point where, and I'm saying this like fingers crossed, but it's to the point where I hope that's not a way to guarantee you're going to beat the Sixers, where it's just take the ball out of his hands and he'll either make a mistake or, you know, the Sixers get a shot that isn't the look they wanted. I don't think that's really the case. They have good shooters around and he's making the right read. So it's been I said it before, but he's basically done everything he wanted to do to start the playoffs. And it's been a lot of fun.
You know, part of Joel's down year last year was obviously he was down in lots of ways, but he was so clear that he didn't trust his teammates to make open shots. And like, you know, the Horford and Richardson, like he wasn't compelled to make the right pass because he wasn't convinced that the right thing would happen after that pass. So he definitely trusts his teammates at this point. Tobias has been so good. I just want to highlight how like consistent and impressive Tobias has been. StatMuse tweeted like his game logs basically since the playoffs started. He has scored below 20 points only once. He has shot under 52% from the field only once. He's just been excellent. It's been so great to watch him play well and have such a great year and continue it in the playoffs, which he hadn't done in Philadelphia yet. George Hill is also from Kyle. George Hill and Tobias Harris coming into his own. I would list him now as one of my favorite teammates ever. Just a great guy to be around. He's a big leader for us, and we're going to continue to lean on him. Chris, when you look at the season from Tobias and the way he's been able to perform in the playoffs, like, is there something that you attribute that most to? Is it the roster changes, you know, to make the Sixers a bit of a smaller team and let him play the four a little bit more? Is it internal improvement or, you know, what would you attribute this sort of year from Tobias to? And do you think he can carry it through the rest of the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, I think sort of similarly to Joel, it's a combination of factors. I definitely think the roster fit is better. He's not having to play next to Al Horford anymore. He's in a much more natural position as a scorer. Doc has obviously done a very good job with him in the past as well of kind of maximizing his skill set. And this season, he's gotten Tobias to kind of buy into a more condensed role where he's not trying to freelance as much. He's making quicker decisions. He's doing, you know, less over dribbling. He's really just kind of come into his own offensively. I do think a lot of that too is just personal improvement, kind of like Joel. He's just gotten a lot better around the edges. I think there's a lot that goes into it. And as you mentioned, it's been a really impressive postseason from him. I think he's kind of gotten lost in the shadow of Joel, but, you know, he's been really good.
Yeah. Dan, famously, Tobias still waiting on an apology from you, but what do you think about the way he's been able to continue his play in the postseason?
Yeah, you've asked me to apologize to every player on the team at this point.
Really, it's so fun. I love doing that.
No, I think I enjoy the bit.
Yeah,
it's kind of unbelievable that this is the same player as last season. Like, Tobias has always looked like a guy who's a very talented scorer, but that doesn't mean he was doing it consistently or efficiently. And this year has been, you know, to start the year, I was still pretty skeptical, and you know, people who listened to the pod back then will definitely remember me saying, like, you know, it's been 10 games, you know, it's been 5 games, 10 games. We've seen plenty of players have good stretches, and you know, I obviously hoped he would keep it up, and he has, and I'm honestly shocked. I mean, he's, ever since he came to Philly, he's been fine. He hasn't been, you know, high 30s of millions of dollars good or $40 million good. I'm still always hesitant to, you know, relitigate his contract and say that everyone who said that, you know, this was a bad contract was wrong or something like that, right? Like, I think there's absolutely something to be said that, like, he was like a borderline top 100 player last year, making, you know, a near max contract, and that's a problem. You know, if you can't get a good performance from someone making that much money every year, and who's to say if this will continue? I certainly hope it will, and he's been really successful under Doc. But as far as these playoffs go and this season, right? Like, this season, what he's done, sure, is worth that contract. And, you know, these playoffs, I've been really impressed. He's kept it up, and it's, yes, absolutely worth that contract. Now, will this continue into next season? I hope so. At this moment, I don't really care. It's not on my mind at all, because he's bringing it in the playoffs when it matters most, and the Sixers are contending this year. So, you know, when the Sixers have a chance to win and he's bringing that kind of production, I think it's, you know, it's fantastic. And if you want me to apologize, I'll say I'm sorry if it makes you happy. I think
apologize to me.
Not to you. I will never apologize to you for anything, but I can apologize to Tobias if you'd like. I won't fully mean it. I think he was terrible last year, but I think he's been fantastic this year. And so if an apology will make you, Steve, feel better, I know Tobias doesn't care and isn't listening, but I'll apologize to Tobias just to make you feel better. So I Tobias, really, I'm sorry.
That is the only thing making it into the podcast, buddy boy. Tobias, I'm sorry, is the whole podcast.
Go ahead, cut the rest. That's perfect.
Yep. If anybody ever wanted to ruin me, I wrote on Liberty Ballers within one column in the off season that the Sixers should amnesty Tobias. So I think that's a really good take of mine that people should go back to.
Will you apologize?
Oh, of course. To you?
To me, not to him.
Don't make me mute you. I can do it. Emily, what's your comment on Tobias, his play in the playoffs, and has it surprised you with how consistent he's been?
He's been playing really well in the playoffs. You guys have both said that. I don't really have more like stats or fun things to add to it besides that the consistency has been really nice. And I think that the playoff consistency doesn't surprise me that much because he was so consistent in the regular season. And in the past years, he hasn't been this consistent in the regular season. It was part of our annoyance with him. And so it would have been like really strange to have him have this huge drop off just in the playoffs. And so I'm glad to see that he doesn't have some like weird playoff basketball god voodoo on him, and that it's possible that he can play well in the playoffs. I was really scared for him though in that game when he like cracked his head on the camera or whatever happened. I don't like head injuries. They make me very nervous. Any like head or neck things, especially because I think that cameraman should have just moved and not stayed there. But I was happy to see him stay in the game. Like he could have easily like gotten a concussion or like, I
don't. Well, and you remember game four against Boston last year, he hit his head on the floor and was bleeding.
Super scary. Yeah. So like, can
and
we
they
stop?
Put him back in, by the way. Oh my God.
Oh yeah. Yep, that was when in. I think, yeah, I do remember. Oh, we did have a podcast then, didn't we?
Because we did. And we could not believe that Brett put him back in the
game. We were like, oh, Tobias died. And then he came back in the game. That's great.
We were like, Brett, I know you have senioritis at this point, you know you're out of here, but can we not put in somebody with like a brain hemorrhage?
Yeah, seriously. But yeah, I'm happy for Tobias. And like Dan said, like, did he think that, you know, the contract was not great last year, but like none of it matters right now. Like if we keep making this deep playoff run, like I will pay him whatever he wants. Like if this team manages to bring a trophy home, like they can all have whatever the hell they want. I do not care, because that's all I want.
The final thing to wrap up, I think, from this game is sort of Danny Green unfortunately hurt his calf. He strained his calf. This is from Harrison Sanford, who I don't know what he does, but he is Danny Green's podcast co-host. He said, Danny Green has a grade 2 right calf strain. Best case scenario for return would be 2 weeks. Could extend to 5 weeks. There's a chance that he skips game 4 in Atlanta. I believe the Sixers have already sent Danny back to Philadelphia to get treatment. DG is optimistic he can make a return at some point as long as the Sixers hold ground. He was relieved that it wasn't an Achilles injury, which is what I was worried about too, which means regardless of how the Sixers playoff run turns out, he'll be ready to go next year. Danny Green tweeted, I'm cool. Be back in no time. To the real ones, thank you. I will say after the game, Doc said, I'm not ruling Danny out, but I'm pretty much ruling him out. Okay. I doubt it if he plays the next game, and obviously he won't. So he's going to be out for a few weeks.
Doc, well-known knower of his players' injuries.
Always going on with the injury.
Spot on.
Always on the ball, Doc.
Yep. Game starts in 2 minutes. Is Joel playing? He's like, who? Great. Looking forward to it. In his stead, Furkan Korkmaz had another great game. He played really well. He had 14 points off the bench. He played 27 minutes. He shot 4 of 9 from the field, 3 of 6 from three. I don't know if I said plus 24. He had 2 steals. He was quoted after the game describing how and why the series changed the last couple of games. He said, game one is like a fish coming out of the water. Sometimes you don't know what it's going to be. And I think we've said that for years.
Do you guys have Furkan nicknames? Do you like call him anything when he plays well, or is that just me?
I don't think I do. Do you?
I don't have any good ones. No.
No.
I didn't say I have any good ones. I just said that when he is like shooting well, I tend to refer to him as Ferk Daddy a lot. And I didn't know if anyone else does that. Or is it just me? That's cool.
I don't know that I've said it out loud, but I've definitely thought it. Ferk Daddy. It makes sense.
It flows off the tongue really well, I think, personally.
I think I'll think that going forward. So that's fantastic.
Like
I yell
like game five, like if he's making threes, like I will be screaming Ferk Daddy. So
I'll scream it with you. Maybe we get a Ferk Daddy chant going.
That would be fun.
Wow. All right. I think that sounds great. Doc was quoted today. He really will not say who is going to replace Danny in the starting lineup. You know, somebody, one of the reporters asked him what he's looking for in a replacement. Doc said, what I'm looking for is a 76er. Joke's on Doc. Nobody calls them the 76ers.
Say, though, he was like, I'm pretty sure who it's going to be, but I'm not going to tell you.
Yes. It's like after the final rose. Like, we don't know who's going to get the rose, and we're going to wait and see. Doc, you know, so let's talk about Danny Green. How big of a stand? Do not. How big of a loss we think it is? He doesn't seem all that essential in this particular series because it looks like what they need from him and you know, they can patch together that. But going forward, just overall, who do you think should replace him in the starting lineup? I think the main contenders are Matisse Thybul, Furkan Korkmaz, Ferk Daddy, if you will, and George Hill, I think, has some, even I think Harrison Sanford even, in that string of tweets was like, what about George Hill? It's like, all right, don't really, just the injury update would be great. Emily, what do you think about losing Danny for a few weeks here, and who would you like to see replace him in the starting lineup?
Yeah, it's hard. I'm going to go with Furkan. I think I had talked about liking Matisse in the starting lineup and like thinking that would be a fun change. But now that like Ben has handled Trae Young so well, and I don't feel like we need both Ben and Matisse on him at the same time, that doesn't seem as helpful. So I think it would be good to get someone I think we should just like play the hot hand. Like if George Hill is like making a bunch of threes in warmups, and like, maybe we go with him. And if it's Furkan, maybe we go with him. Is there a huge difference in their skill sets if one is hot versus the other?
Yeah. Dan, what about you? Who would you like to start in game four?
Yeah. I mean, I would probably start Matisse. I agree that in the sense that like, Trae Young is not so good that you're doubling him or anything like that. You know, certainly not sending your two best defenders at him at the same time. But I do think that, you know, if as long as it doesn't get too clunky out there, which I don't really think it will, I would like to have his defense on the floor. And offensively, you know, I kind of mentioned this earlier. I don't know if that was after, I think it was after game one, but basically like, you know, Danny's a much better shooter, but he's still the kind of player who is not really going to dribble, and that Trae Young can kind of just stand on and they can hide him over there a little bit. Matisse isn't going to make the threes, but Danny's been off from three anyway. And, you know, if you can get that level of defense and, you know, you're going to be hiding Trae Young on someone anyway. And Trae, I don't think Trae actually in this series has been that bad defensively. Like certainly he's not like a plus defender or anything, but I don't think he's been a disaster by any means. And so, you know, you could put George Hill out there and get a little more offense and, you know, certainly more well-rounded player than Matisse, but I would like to put Matisse out there and create some hopefully off ball havoc and make things hard on Trae, maybe not on ball, you know, if you have Ben on Trae, but Matisse taking away some passing lanes or sticking close to one of their good shooters. I think that it's just in this series, it's well cut out for Matisse. Going forward now, obviously Brooklyn and Milwaukee are obviously assuming the Sixers win this series. Knock on wood, I really think it'll happen. I'm sorry if it doesn't, but I'm pretty sure it will anyway. I'm not trying to jinx anything here. Brooklyn and Milwaukee is kind of in a weird spot where it's like Brooklyn is clearly the better team, but now their first and third best players are hurt. And it's like, what do we even expect from there? And it's basically dependent on health for who the Sixers are going to play. And obviously then, you know, maybe Matisse isn't the right guy in against one of those teams, but for now, and I don't think Danny Green certainly will be back by either of those series either, at least not for the start of them, even not best the start, case scenario. Yeah. And for now, you know, the team we're playing is the Hawks, the team we have to beat just twice more is the Hawks. I think Matisse is the guy who I would go with. I think he's the best suited.
Chris, what about you?
Yeah, I kind of agree with Emily that they'll probably just end up riding the hot hand. You know, Furk had a really good game three, so he would probably qualify as the hot hand right now. I feel like Doc kind of likes Thibel in the bench when Joe and Ben are both playing. You know, he did foul out in 16 minutes, so you still have to take into account foul trouble with him sometimes. The offense obviously is a little bit wonky every now and then. So maybe you go with Furkan because he's a consistent shooter. He's been playing better defensively, and the starting lineup is pretty well equipped to kind of hide him on the defensive end. So I think he'll probably end up being Furkan. I like the idea of George Hill a lot. He hasn't been at his best yet with Philly. I think he's still kind of getting used to this team. But I do like George Hill. I think offensively and defensively, especially if this does end up getting to Brooklyn, maybe Hill would be ideal in that specific matchup. But I think there's a pretty strong case for all three. But yeah.
Yeah, I think that I would go with Furkan just because the rate at which Danny shoots threes is very important, I think, in lineups with Ben and Joe. If you think ahead to even a semi-healthy Brooklyn team, I don't know that you can start Furkan and Seth at the same time because they're really good at hunting mismatches. And you know, who knows? Actually, Chris, I'd like to ask you, like, from a Hawks perspective, how do you think they counter here going into game four? Do you think a change in the starting lineup with Solomon Hill, you know, making way for somebody else? Do you think there's any other, you know, tactic they'll go about with guarding Joel? What do you expect from Atlanta's angle going into game four?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really sure what more they can do against Joel. They kind of threw everything in the kitchen sink at him in game three, and it didn't do much. I mean, only 27 points, but a very efficient 27 with 8 assists, as we mentioned earlier. I think their best five obviously involves Kevin Huerter at the three instead of Solomon Hill. So maybe that's a change that they make, but Herter's been playing way more minutes anyways. I think there's some benefit to kind of keeping him and Gallinari with that second unit group so they can go longer stretches without multiple starters on the floor. I think that's been one of Atlanta's bigger advantages, though maybe not so much the last couple of games, is that their bench can score a lot of points when Gallo and Huerter are on the floor out there, especially with Lou Will. Like, they have some offense off the bench in ways that most teams don't. But I'm not really sure where they go from here. I think Philly, when they execute, is pretty clearly the better team. Obviously, Atlanta has been on pretty much a tear ever since they fired Lloyd Pierce. I don't want to undersell what they've been able to accomplish, but Philly's seems to have them figured out defensively for the most part. Their offense just, you know, cut Atlanta's defense to death the other night. So I'm really not sure what they can do.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
I think that, let's look around to the rest of the league. Any thoughts on the other series that are happening right now? The game that Dan referenced before, Milwaukee and Brooklyn. Milwaukee beat Brooklyn. Kyrie Irving went out after, I think, 15 minutes or so with what looks like a pretty brutal ankle injury. James Harden is coming back from a hamstring injury. A lot of people are saying he's going to be back in the next game. I would be careful with that. Like, I don't know that they can win with only KD out there, but hamstrings are really tough. I thought this series was over at full strength. I thought that Brooklyn was just sort of going to blow the doors off them, and they probably would have anyway, but now it's 2-2. From a Sixers perspective, I'm happy that it's going longer. You know, I'd rather the series go longer and the Sixers, you know, get some rest. Yeah, other than that, you know, Phoenix might sweep, you know, Denver, and then the Jazz and the Clippers. That's now 2-1. Dan, what do you got on the series around the league?
Yeah, I mean, it's at least in the East, right? Like, I don't even know who to prefer at this point. I think, again, like, it depends on health. Like, if you tell me that Kyrie and Harden will be back by the Eastern Conference Finals, but maybe they don't play in the Bucks series again, I'm obviously rooting for the Bucks, right? Like, I think Brooklyn is a lot better as a team. But I don't really know what the actual case is, right? Like, there's some speculation Harden might play. I think Steve Nash made some comments after the game that they're going to be cautious with Harden, though. The Irving injury, obviously, you know, didn't look good. And when will he be back? I have no clue. I don't think anyone knows right now, other than that x-rays were negative. And, you know, obviously, hopefully he's back as soon as possible for, you know, the sake of everyone just being healthy, which I think that, you know, any good NBA fan is always rooting for. But injuries are a real thing. They're part of the game. And like, you know, the Raptors championship a couple of years ago counts no less that the Warriors were dealing with injuries. And so I think that it's a weird situation where, you know, you're rooting for guys to get back as quick as possible. But the Nets are a lot better than the Bucks. I think that's kind of obvious from games one and two when everyone is at, well, the Nets weren't even at full strength. They were missing, in my opinion, their best player. The Bucks have been fine lately. I would still probably pick the Sixers and maybe seven in a series like that. But we'll have to see. I think if Harden comes back, I like the Nets in that series, even if Irving is out for a few games. And if Harden can't play and Irving can't play, I would definitely like the Bucks. So it's hard to say. I think the Suns, and we'll know by the time this pod comes out, which I think is tomorrow morning, I think the Suns will sweep. Mm-hmm. The Clippers just cut it to 2-1 last night, two nights ago when this comes out. They're kind of still my pick to come out of the West, which is weird. I think they're kind of like, the Suns are, in my opinion, pretty easily the coolest team left in the West. I think the Suns are kind of awesome. The Jazz, obviously, doesn't need to be said. They're lame. In my opinion, we won this game. It's one of the lamest things I've ever heard. The Clippers just have so much talent, though. I think that, you know, obviously, I don't see the Nuggets coming back to win this series. And I think, arguably, you could somewhat make the case for Donovan Mitchell, especially how he's been in the playoffs. But there's also a really good case that between the Jazz and the Suns, the Clippers have the two best players in either of those series. And so, you know, it's hard to pick against that kind of talent. They're down 2-1. They just got a big win. Where, again, kind of same thing in that Dallas series. They started off horrible in game three while they were down 2-0. They were down 2-0, got off to an awful start, and came back and won game three. And against Dallas, that kind of turned things around. So I don't think it's unlikely at all that that is the case against Utah, but the Jazz are good. The Jazz are a good team. They're a lot better than Dallas, like way, way, way better than Dallas.
Yeah.
Obviously they don't have a Luka, but just they're so, so deep. And so we'll see what happens, but I think that's a lot less interesting, obviously, than the series in the East. I fully expect the Sixers to beat the Hawks. I'd like to actually hear what Chris has to say about how many games he thinks this ends up going in the Sixers-Hawks series. But both the Bucks and the Sixers both the Bucks and the Nets would be a good series with the Sixers. I think at this point I would be rooting for the Bucks, even with injuries, just because I think, you know, guys are okay and will be healthy. But I kind of expect it to be the Nets. I think that you know, Harden will end up playing, and Irving's injury will not prevent him from playing for too long. And I think the Bucks are, you know, even if they miss one game, maybe better, but more beatable from a Sixers perspective. Ultimately, I think though that the Nets win; they're the better team. But that's kind of what I got around the league.
Chris, you can take that and just let us know what you think, how many games this ends up being, and who wins between the Sixers and the Hawks, and then whatever else you have on the rest of the league.
Yeah, I mean, assuming Joel continues to play, before the series, I said Sixers in six because we were kind of unsure about Embiid's availability at that point. Before the playoffs, I had Sixers in five. I think it probably ends up being five or six games. It doesn't feel like a seven-game series right now. I think Atlanta kind of lost the wind in their sails in game three. I could be wrong. We'll see what happens Monday night. But I think five or six is probably the direction this is going. And as far as the other series, I agree wholly with Dan. Like a healthy Brooklyn is probably far better than Philadelphia. That's ideally, you don't want to face them. But the Bucks are in a weird place where like they're tied 2-2 with Brooklyn, and I haven't been really impressed with them at all. I think they've been pretty underwhelming. So we'll see what happens there. Hopefully Kyrie and Harden can come back sooner than later. Obviously you want guys to be healthy, but I think Milwaukee winning that series would probably be to the Sixers' benefit. I predicted Bucks in seven when we had the hypothetical conversation about Milwaukee and Philly before the playoffs. The Bucks just haven't looked as good as I thought they would, so I'm kind of wavering there. I think Joel is pretty clearly the best player in that series now, whereas maybe earlier in the season I wasn't quite so sure. So I think Bucks, if they can pull this out and pull the upset, that would pretty clearly benefit Philly as long as they move on from Atlanta. But yeah, I mean, in the West, I hope the Suns win. I really want good things to happen for Chris Paul. It's high past time that he makes it to the finals. But I too, I picked the Clippers before, the playoffs. If they can get Utah back to 2-2, if they can turn the tide on this series like they did with Dallas, I'd be kind of hard pressed to bet against them. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are really good players. Utah, as you said, is much better than Dallas. They're much deeper. The Mavs are basically Luka and a dumpster fire. So, LA hasn't really impressed, but they still have a pretty great roster on paper. I think there's a real chance they still come out of the West, like Dan said, but we'll have to see what happens. Hopefully it's Suns Sixers. That's been kind of my ideal from the start. I would really enjoy that series and that matchup, but I'll be interested to see how things go from here.
Emily, thoughts on the series happening around the league?
I want the Suns to win. Like you all said, I think they're a fun team. They kind of remind me of like their vibes, like remind me of the Sixers vibes. They're fun. They're young. They like joke around with each other. Booker pulls up in that car. Rudy Gobert isn't pulling up in like an old whatever kind of car that is, Cutlass Supreme. Like he sucks. Mm-hmm. So like the Suns. Also I just like the idea that Jokic goes out kind of early. That's fun for me. I'm happy that the Clippers won a game, although I don't know that I'll pick them in the series. I kind of think they're a fraudy team. Like I wouldn't pick them to go to the finals. But it means that Wednesday's game's at 7:30 instead of 8:30, which is good for my old lady body and sleep schedule. This is all about me, really. All of my thoughts are about me in response to basketball. Yeah. the Bucks Nets series, I'm glad it's tied up now. Like the longer these teams play, the better for us. Because knock on wood, we'll be seeing one of these teams in the Eastern Conference Finals. I have a dollar on the Bucks, so I stand to win very big money if they pull this out. So I'm going to root for them. I also think we have a better shot at beating them, although I'm a shameless homer and think we can beat either of these teams. So those are my thoughts.
Final item from around league stuff. I don't know what this article is from. Apologies.
I think it's a San Francisco Chronicle article.
Love it.
Based on my research.
Chronicle then. This is an article about Steph Curry. He is quoted as saying, I'm a pseudo Sixer fan now. Steph said, predicting a Philadelphia-Utah finals. I mean, holy shit, the takes in a Philadelphia Jazz finals would be amazing. I would really enjoy that. With Philadelphia winning the finals and with Seth Curry being named finals MVP, Steph said, we're going storybook with a laugh. Any official comment from any of you, Chris? Are you keeping an eye on things with Golden State and Steph Curry, especially now that he's a fan of the Sixers?
I mean, not really, you know. I mean, obviously he's probably more of a Seth fan than a Sixers fan, truth be told. He's not going to leave Golden State, but it's fun to dream. It would obviously be pretty wild to see him and Joel on the floor together. I don't think you can really think up a better player to pair with Joel on paper, so
yeah,
it's a fun thought. I don't know if I would put much money into on it, but but on like the Jazz Sixers point, I think the worst possible timeline here is Jazz Bucks, because I just don't want to watch that. I'm great players, I'm sure it'll be fine basketball, but I don't want to watch it.
That would be bad.
Emily,
official comment on Steph, like us, being a fan of the Sixers?
I'm just going to say, join them in that we
and
should.
And that's not.
I'm just mean we should join Steph in being Sixers fans and rooting for Seth to win finals MVP. That's what I mean by that.
A big join them from I think, the podcast. Dan, anything you want to add?
I mean, first of all, I think we should fine Emily for that. I mean, that's just unacceptable. That's clear tampering. You can't say that. Yeah, that dollar on the Bucks is going toward the NBA now. I like Chris said, I mean, I don't think it's likely at all, but it's also the perfect pairing. And you know, while a normal person would probably not think about it much because it's not very likely, and I think he'll retire a Warrior, I'm gonna think about it every day for the entire offseason, and admittedly probably some days during the playoffs, and I'll kind of feel bad about it. But I'm going to do it because it would be awesome if it happened. And I like to hope. So I think that'd be a lot of fun. And by him saying that he's a pseudo Sixers fan, I'm personally hearing I will play for the Sixers next year.
Yep.
And that's basically it. That's what I'm hearing out of the situation.
Great. Chris, my final question for you is, are you a fan of The Bachelorette?
I've never watched it.
Well, in that case, you are released, because that's the last thing we're going to talk about, and I will not force you to sit through that. So, Chris Klein, the Sixer Sense, they can read your stuff. You host the Sixer Sense pod. Anything else that you want us to get out there about you, where people can follow you, whatever you want?
I mean, everyone can follow me on Twitter at KleinNBA. Go read the site. We have a lot of great writers putting in great work there every day. I really appreciate y'all having me on. So thank you.
Thanks so much for doing this, man. You were great. I really appreciate it.
And I just want to say, so I started writing at the Sixer Sense, and Chris is awesome. But that's kind of a side note to what I'm about to say, which is that when I was writing there, I told my dad they have an app. So there's the Sixer Sense app, right? And when they write a new story, anyone at the site, you get a notification on this app. And I haven't written there in a couple of years, but Liberty Ballers doesn't have an app. And my dad really likes Chris's writing. So he keeps using the app and gets a notification anytime the site, posts anything, even though I don't write there anymore, just because he likes the Sixers. And sometimes he'll say to me, did you see what Chris wrote? It was really good. And I just think that that's very cute.
I love that. I think that's great. Chris, thank you so much for being with us, man.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Dan, to your dad. Tell him I appreciate it.
I will. Thanks, Chris.
All right.
Yeah.
Finally, The Bachelorette gang. It premiered last week. How do we feel? Give me some overall thoughts on the episode, overall thoughts on Katie, and overall thoughts on I have to say, the young Jew who won the first Best Impression prize, whatever it is. Young Gregory, hello. Love it. Emily, what do you have to say about all of that?
I really like Katie. We were all big Katie fans during Matt's season. I think that she's not really in the group of gals that all hang out together in New York City. I don't know if she was like super liked among the other women, but I think that's because she kind of didn't put up with their bullshit. She's a little bit older than them, which is why we all liked her. The no bullshit part, not the older part. I don't care how old these people are. So yeah, I think the one guy really looks like Giannis, which is cool. I like him a lot. Andrew S., the Vienna football player.
He's like my pick to win. Yeah.
I think he goes far. I think Greg, aforementioned Greg, goes far. Katie seems to like kind of weirdos. Like, she's really into that cat guy, which he took the cat thing way too far for me. Like, the paws were creepy. But he seems fine enough. So
they were making out and his paws were on her face and it was just a real.
And then she got his cat makeup all over her face. It was weird. I'm excited to see how it turns out. It's our first of many non-Chris Harrison seasons, as Chris Harrison is officially out. So I think they're going to be this season I think is fully hosted by Tayshia and Caitlin, which it was fun to see them. I like both of them a lot, but we'll see how it goes. They're trying out multiple hosts for Paradise. They announced Lil John and David Spade and Lance Bass. So they're rotating hosts for Paradise. I guess they're trying stuff out. And we'll see how it goes. But I hope Katie finds love, and there's a lot of real dumb drama. So that's what I live for.
Yeah. Dan, what about you? What were your big takeaways from episode
one? I still haven't watched the premiere, actually.
Oh, my gosh, Dan.
No, I'm sorry. Listen. Dan. I've been weirdly busy this week, considering I do nothing all the time. I've kind of weirdly been had a lot going on. But I'm planning on watching it tomorrow before the next episode tomorrow. Emily's thoughts have definitely sold me further on it. I'm very excited to see whatever the hell this cat thing is. I also heard talking to some friends who did watch it because they're, I guess better at watching things. And I honestly had plenty of time and I'm just half busy and also half cannot commit to watch a 2-hour thing unless I have 7 hours. But I hear that, at the start of the rose ceremony and at the end of it, it's a different person talking between Tayshia and who's the other person?
Caitlin.
And then they're constantly switching places depending on who's talking. I'm really interested to keep an eye on that. But I'm excited for it, but I haven't watched, so I don't have a lot of good thoughts.
Okay. The one last thing I want to talk to, I guess, Emily about.
Dan, I guess you can leave now too.
All right. See you guys. Have a good night. All right.
Is the scene that is isolated? There's nothing before it that explains it. There's nothing after it. Right. There's a tall gentleman talking to the guy who sells zippers. And the guy, they enter the scene like this, and the tall guy is pointing at him and he's saying, "Listen to me, I don't like you. I've never liked you, and I won't ever like you," or something like that. And the zipper guy goes, "All right, that's your opinion." And the tall guy goes, "I don't care if it's my opinion. I don't like you. Stay away from me." Zipper guy goes, "Just because it's your opinion doesn't mean it's right." They walk off. They don't explain it. They never talk about it at all. After they go right to another scene of Katie and the cat guy. I have no idea what happened. I was delighted by it. I thought we had fallen asleep and missed part, the whole lead up to it. Emily, were you as confused as I was?
Yeah, I was and me and Jordy were watching and we were just he's known this man for 45 minutes. I've never liked you. I will never like you. I was just very adamant, and they have drink rules. So he couldn't, I know night one is very long. Normally when they leave, it's the morning, but they have drink rules. They're not allowed to get super hammered anymore. So he couldn't have been that drunk to be I don't know, but it was very, Dan, you'll notice immediately when this happens, it's it comes out of left field and it's just very funny. Yeah, so that was great.
We're all going to have to be doing multi-screens because the Sixers play at 7:30 Monday night, Bachelorette at 8 o'clock.
God bless the DVR, you know.
God bless America.
I have one more thing that's like,
please.
It's like a weird thing because we were doing like stupid Bachelorette and then this is a kind of like serious thing.
Okay.
But I just want to commend Dan's best friend, Tobias Harris, for being named a finalist for the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar Social Justice Champion Award. I think he's one of five finalists. Carmelo's one. I would assume Jaylen Brown is one, but I don't know for sure. Yeah. And Tobias just like released a statement. I won't read the whole thing, but just about he lives in Philadelphia. He wants to make an impact on the education system in Philadelphia. And it's been a focal point for him. And he's just honored to be a finalist. And I'm honored to have him play for our team. So I just wanted to shout him out for that.
Big time agree. Thank you for including that. I should have put that in there.
And Joel for it. Joel was a finalist as well for I forget the name of the award. It's a community award though as well.
Yes.
Yeah, the Sixers for like NBA Community Cares, I think. He's like the Sixers rep. So a lot of our guys are like they're fun and they're great. And I would just hate to not be a Sixers fan. It must suck.
I agree. All right. Game four, Monday night. Game five, famously, Gastro Blues at the Sixers. If you're there, feel free to say hello.
DM us and we'll tell you where we're sitting. You come say hi.
Yes. We'll let you know.
Follow us on Twitter.
Yeah.
It'll be really fun. I'm really looking forward to it.
I'm hoping that we all get along in person half as well as we get along through Zoom and phone calls and letters. It's just a real pleasure to see you both. Looking forward to Wednesday. Really hoping Sixers win Monday so that we can clinch the series on Wednesday. That would be especially fun. Looking forward to meeting Jordy. Hope he doesn't hate us. Hard to know what's going to happen. Yep. we'll find out. Good to see you guys. Have a great night. Go Sixers, get this game four win. I don't know when we'll be able to do a locker room. We'll see. I don't know. That's great. Good seeing you guys.
Wait, one more quick thing. I forgot to say this earlier. One of my favorite things of the playoffs so far has been the Giannis 10-second violations at the foul line. He had another one the other night. They're so funny.
So funny.
Did you see that the opposing teams like started to put a countdown clock on their like Jumbotron and then the NBA told them they're not allowed to do that, which is just like a fun sucking thing.
Right.
Like, let them do it.
It's like NFL saying you can't dunk on the goalposts anymore.
Or if it's like, hey, you can't hold up Frosties. Like, you got to put your Frosty cutouts down. If they do that, there'll be a riot in Philadelphia. So don't do that.
Dwight himself.
But even after they stopped the timer, he had another one.
I know.
Like, what is he? He's so in his head. It's wild. I can't believe it.
Who needs to take that long to shoot a free throw?
I read something else that, like, someone else dribbles, like, three times more than he does in their warm-up, but, like, takes, like, 4 seconds less. Like, they're just, like, slow, methodical. And then he airballs free throws. It's hilarious.
I would love statistics of the people who take the longest to shoot free throws and, like, how much – is it the people who take longer are worse at them in Giannis's case? Or is it the people that, I don't know, Joel holds the ball out to the side. I like to think that when he's doing that, it's like that's like where his son is standing, like maybe in his head. I've made that up in my head, but I'm wondering why he holds the ball out to his side.
That's deep.
Thank you. Do you remember when Andre Iguodala made those two free throws and said that Tony Battee told him to, in his head, be teaching his son how to shoot free throws? And he said that's how he was teaching, like in his head, when he had to make those two free throws, he was teaching his son. Next round, couldn't make any free throws. What happened to the son teaching bit? Like, are we done? Is the son?
He's an expert. He learned.
Yeah, he already knew.
I guess so. Goodbye. Good times.
Yeah.
Bye.